Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. You can watch today's program by going to GaryNull.com or ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Today, Crouching Garnish, Hidden Superfood, The Secret Life of Kale. I know many of you have tried the dried kale chips. They're a raw food, just about 115 degrees. They dry out the water, add different seasonings. Very tasty and very good for you. Most people don't eat kale. That's unfortunate because it really is a very healthy food. Well, from Sayre G of Green Med Info, we're going to give you more in-depth on that today. Also, there's a movement again for completely healthy women to have mastectomies because they supposedly have the gene that will predict cancer. That's a complete fraud. And I want to talk about a new study out of the University of Michigan Health System on that very topic. Also, there's a compound found in rosemary that protects against macular degeneration. And newly discovered effects of vitamin D on cancer. Also, the latest good news on Alzheimer's. Then, from our environmental segment today, three reports, all from different groups, but all very important. And go back in time, if you listen to this program, and remember when I said 7 years ago that we were going to get to a point within the next year or two where there would be no accurate mathematical model for how fast the water would rise, how bad the hurricanes would be, how many tornadoes there'd be, but it was all going to get much worse. Now I'll give you three separate reports today from Science Daily and from other groups, including a UN group on environmental programs, showing you, quote, thawing of permafrost expected to cause significant additional global warming, yet not accounted for in any climate predictions, quote, sea levels rising faster than any projections, quote, alarming year of extremes as climate's tipping point looms. UN groups issue stark warnings as climate summit in Dubai. I'll talk about those. Now, for our guest in the second part of our program, third part of our program today, we're going to talk about the overview of academic and medical and media shills who attack alternative health care on behalf of Big Pharma, the Quackbusters. Medical McCarthyism. My guest, Dr. Joseph Mercola. He is one of the more popular advocates out there of alternative lifestyles. He is the author of The No-Grain Diet and The Great Bird Flu Hoax and other books. We'll have him on, Joseph Mercola, my guest. Then I'm going to go to our commentary and issue segment, and we'll, time permitting, from J.D. Hayes from Natural News, global government now seeks total control over the Internet. While many people are not paying attention, those who wanted to control what is said over the Internet have been working diligently. We'll pull back the curtain and show you what they're doing, who's involved, and how they're going about it. And finally, from Stephen Rohde from Truthout, will President Obama restore the rule of law during his second term? And for all of you who voted for him, I have found quotes that he made when he was a senator, and I'm going to offer these quotes and then compare them to what he actually did once in office. And then you see something that I've said many times. Now, here is my issue of the day. And you can do it with a corporation, with a country, with an individual, in a relationship, a leader. If someone lies to you, but they don't lie to someone else around them, are they a liar? If someone stole from you but didn't steal from someone else, are they a thief? If they betrayed you and didn't betray someone else, are they a betrayer? And then put that in the context of what we're told daily by members of the media who have all the resources to find the truth but choose not to, our embedded journalists who choose never to show the consequences of our actions on people around the world. For example, they'll be right there to promote Bono, who is now joined with Obama to promote large land purchases by the type of corporations like Monsanto and other corporate entities and hedge funds in Africa, with the intent of lessening hunger and poverty, but with the absolute outcome that they will create hunger and poverty. Why, if you're that wealthy and you could have the truth, why do you refuse consistently, Bono, to get the truth about anything? I've never met a more foolish human being in my life. I know people who are close to him who have brought him information on all the lies about AIDS, and he's refused. He still goes out and raises money for the very people who are causing more people to suffer and die and perpetuate lies. So why is it that we vote for people who lie to us? Why is it we vote and support people and institutions that betray us? Why is it we don't challenge those in authority ever? Why? That'll be my issue. So all this is coming. As you see, we have a lot to share. Let's begin. I grew up where if you went into a restaurant and you got a meal, almost always the garnish, which was parsley, was never eaten. It was thrown aside. And almost all the food that you ate was very heavily cooked. And rarely did you ever have a salad of more than a chunk of iceberg lettuce, which was absolutely tasteless, and a tomato that was never juicy. That was the extent of the vegetables. You would have string beans, but they would always be boiled in lard and pork. Beans were always with pork. Everything was with pork. They loved pork where I grew up. And chicken was always deep fried, and fish always came in little fish sticks or was deep fried. They would batter them up, lots of salt. And I once asked my dad, I said, why all this free fish every Saturday and Sunday in the beer joints? Now, where I grew up, we didn't have any place to go and shoot pool or socialize, so there were these beer joints. And the beer joints was really, there was two parts. One was the back room where they had darts, dominoes, and a pool table. And in the front part, there was a bar and tables where people sit around and watch ball games. And they had a low-alcohol beer, about 3.2%, and they would drink and socialize. But everywhere you looked, on every table, there was a stack of fried fish. And they would just batter the fish and deep fry it. And so I said, Dad, what is this? And he said, well, it's simple. He said, watch how many beers next week. He actually did this for me. He said, watch how many beers someone will drink if there's no salty food. And then watch what happens when you have pretzels, peanuts, and salted catfish. They'll drink three times more because the salt makes them dehydrated. And this was just an observation my dad had. And then I watched, and he was absolutely correct. Well, today, when you think about what do we eat, we eat deep-fried foods. It is becoming the most popular single item in the American diet, deep-frying or grilling, barbecuing, or crusty, like a pizza crust. And it used to be rare. Now it is absolutely common. And also, where do you think people go when they have no more food to put on a bun for you or a plate? They don't invent new foods. They just add more of other foods that you shouldn't have been eating to begin with on top of what you're already eating. Now you get two hamburger patties and two worthless buns that are pure sugar for a dollar at a fast food joint. Well, now that will last for about 6 months, and then some other competitor will come out, and they'll give you a pizza slice on top of the hamburger. So you're getting pizza and hamburger together. They all have these very creative ways. Creativity, yes. Health, absolutely zero. And then that becomes new norm. So now we get back to this lovely little item called kale. I happened into the first kitchen in the United States where they were drying kale. It was up in a nice little Nash food restaurant out in Sedona, Arizona. And here were these ovens, and they were dehydrating ovens, and here was all this fresh kale. It'd be washed, and then there's this seasoning, vegan seasoning, be poured over it, and then put in there, and 12 hours later, they take the kale chips out. And I said, I like that idea. I said, this is very creative. Send me some. And I started introducing it in New York to the people who I know who like that. Now it's everywhere. And now they'll go from kale. Now you're starting to see spinach. You'll see it, all this done. They haven't done parsley done, but mind you, it'll get there. There's about 150 vegetables they could do this with. Why kale? I think kale's best, however, when you lightly steam it, 3 or 4 minutes. That's enough. Then you saute it, low heat, lots of garlic, jalapeno peppers, black pepper, and white pepper. And then after it's all cooked, take 1 teaspoon of Dijon mustard and stir it in with your olive oil. That is an outrageously delicious dish. Anyhow, few foods, according to Sayre G., found at the produce stand are as beneficial, of course, as kale. And yet, it is more commonly found dressing up a display than actually being consumed. Kale is a form of cabbage that, that's been around for quite some time. It is a bitter. And because it's a bitter, and because most people getting it fresh wouldn't know how to eat it, it hasn't been enjoyed. Kale is very rich in nutrients that we normally don't pay attention to. For example, kale contains very little fat. It has 2 grams of protein in a normal serving. It has 1 gram of fiber. And that's all fine. It has a good balance of nutrients, but it's really got a rather substantial amount of glutamic acid and aspartic acid. Excellent source of branched-chain amino acids. And it's also very good because of the phytonutrients it has in it. It's in the cruciferous vegetables. It's loaded with vitamin A. 1 cup of kale contains 10,000 international units of vitamin A, and it's terrific for you. It also has lots of calcium. In fact, it contains more than omega-3 than omega-6, which is almost unheard of in nature. It's a general rule that you will find about a 41 or higher ratio of omega-6 to omega-3 in most grains, seeds, nuts, and beans. Peanuts, for instance, have 1,800 times more omega-6 fat levels than omega-3, which, taken in isolation, is a pro-inflammatory and unhealthy ratio. Kale, therefore, is a superstar as far as an essential fatty acids go, especially considering that all of its naturally occurring fat soluble antioxidants protect its from oxidizing. And kale also is a good source of beta-carotene, lutein, very rich in lutein, has about 2 or 3 milligrams, and that's good. It has a lot of folic acid, and that's terrific. And so when you look at the lutein and zeaxanthin, you're looking at 25 milligrams. That's a very high dose. And lutein comes from the Latin word luteus, meaning yellow, and it's one of the best-known carotenoids of about 600 different carotenoids. That is, that's terrific for you. Also contains about 80 milligrams of vitamin C per serving. Now think of it this way. An orange contains about 30 to 40 milligrams. So kale gives you well in advance of any of the normal vitamin C found in oranges. And now, just when you thought kale was just too good to be true, there is the matter of its remarkable mineral composition. Of course, the quality and mineral and microbial density of the soil, which is grown in, is a factor. But kale generally has the ability to provide an excellent source of minerals, rich in calcium, 90 milligrams per cup, and that's has a high bioavailability. Iron, magnesium, phosphorus, potassium. In fact, it gives you almost as much potassium per cup as would coconut water. That's good. And it gives you manganese and selenium. So just want everyone to know that if you haven't used kale yet, please bring it into your diet. Also, look at the anti-cancer compounds in kale, such as sulforaphane and indole-3-carbinol. Those are very impressive. So sulforaphane can impact about 100-plus diseases, so you want that in your diet. Now, I'm opposed, and I've been opposed my entire career, to the idea that a healthy woman who has no diagnosable cancer in her breast should have preventative mastectomies. This was started when Happy Rockefeller, Governor Nelson Rockefeller's wife, had her breast removed, and then there was a whole massive movement for mammography, and then preventative mastectomy. And even young girls who had no cancer in their body were having their breasts removed because, quote, they had the gene, or their mother had the gene, or there was cancer in their family. This is the latest from the University of Michigan Health System. About, quote, 70% of women who have both breasts removed following a breast cancer diagnosis do so despite very low risk of facing cancer in the healthy breast, new research shows. Recent studies have shown an increase in women with breast cancer choosing this more aggressive surgery called a prophylactic mastectomy, which raises the question of potential overtreating among these patients. The study found that 90% of the women who had had surgery to remove both breasts reported being very worried about the cancer reoccurring. But a diagnosis of breast cancer in one breast does not increase the likelihood of breast cancer reoccurring in the other breast for most women. From the senior researcher, Sarah Howley, professor of internal medicine at the school, quote, women appear to be using worry over cancer reoccurrence to choose the prophylactic mastectomy. This does not make sense because having a non-affected breast removed will not reduce the risk of reoccurrence in the affected breast. And this was presented at the American Society of Clinical Oncology's Quality Care Symposium. So, first, women who have cancer in one breast are having both removed. Big mistake. And secondly, women who have no cancer in their body, none, zero, but have a positive reading for the so-called gene that will cause cancer, that is complete fraud. Do not ever have a healthy breast removed because some misguided person believes, where there is not the science to prove it, that that would indicate that you're going to get breast cancer and you're going to die of the breast cancer. That's how much fear has caused people to make inappropriate choices. There's a compound found in rosemary that protects against macular degeneration in this laboratory model. This is from Science Daily. It is published in the peer-reviewed journal Investigative Ophthalmology and Visual Science. And here's what it says. This was done at the Sanford and Burnham Institute. Herbs, quote, widely used throughout history in Asia and early European cultures, have received renewed attention by Western medicine in recent years. Scientists are now isolating the active compounds in many medicinal herbs and documenting their antioxidant, anti-inflammatory activities. The Lipton research team found that carnosic acid protects retinas from degeneration and toxicity in cell culture and in rodent models of light-induced retinal damage. Their findings suggest that carnosinic acid may have clinical applications for disease affecting the outer retina, including age-related macular degeneration, the most common eye disease in the United States. And by the way, just so we know, age-related macular degeneration likely has many underlying causes, but oxidative stress is right at the height of that. That's why people who smoke, people who drink, people overweight, they have the most because they have the most inflammation. So now we know that rosemary, that's correct, and you can get rosemary concentrate, rosemary extracts, rosemary the herb, of course. And by taking rosemary, you could help protect your eyes. So now just start to use rosemary in more dishes as a fresh culinary herb, but also use it in tinctures and get more of it into your body. And finally, new vitamin D research shows that vitamin D slows the progression of cells from pre-malignant to malignant states, keeping their proliferation in check. This is research done at McGill University and published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. So vitamin D, very important, and it shows to protect you against cancer. So that's good news. And finally, many of you know that starting in January, I will be doing a one-year lifestyle and behavior modification study with people specifically who have Alzheimer's. You have to have full medical documentation that you have been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, what the status is, from your physician to get qualified to get in. The study's free. I do it as a public service to help people. This is the latest on this. This is from the Alliance for Natural Health. Behind a dangerous new test approved by the FDA is a new drug by the same company. Meanwhile, new research offers better natural solutions. The Food and Drug Administration has approved a new test by Eli Lilly that detects the presence of proteins in the brain that have been connected to Alzheimer's disease. The test uses a $1,600 per dose radioactive chemical called amivid that tags clumps of a sticky substance called amyloid proteins. Some of these proteins may become prions, that is, misfolded proteins that become toxic, but other amyloid proteins are relatively harmless. The chemical is then detected using the PET scan of brain imaging techniques. In the issue of Second Opinion newsletter, Dr. Robert Rowan warns that people who do not show signs of dementia should avoid the test. It is not reliable. Some 20% of cognitively healthy older adults have been found in autopsies to have large quantities of amyloid in the brain. So that is why you should avoid this. Now, what I'm suggesting, however, is that the number one cause for Alzheimer's is inflammation. And anything that causes inflammation in one part of the body can cause inflammation in all parts of the body because your blood carries pro-inflammatory cytokines and tumor necrosis factors every 6.5 minutes right through your whole body. And these are small enough to get right through the blood-brain barrier and cause inflammation in the brain. So this is why when I create a protocol and I say you can have zero, none, not a molecule of dairy or wheat or meat or fried foods or caffeine or sugar, artificial sweeteners, fluoride, it's because these are all pro-inflammatory. And all you do is you exacerbate every single time you take it in there until one day it tips. And the point where it tips, then you manifest an illness. So I'm suggesting we can reverse the process using chelating agents. We can break down a lot of this amyloid plaque by using brain rebalancing and neurological rebalancing nutrients and diet. We can reverse damage, we can regrow new dendrites, we can reconnect cells in the body and then the brain. We've done it, not in a large scale, but on individuals we certainly have. And by the way, Marie McGovern, I have someone that I'd like for you to speak with and about your journey with your Alzheimer's reversal. And they are working with their mother at Columbia University, and they don't believe up at Columbia that it's possible to reverse this naturally. Well, you're an example, so if you would give a call later today to my office, I'll put you in touch with this person, and maybe you can share your experience and your medical records and the work that you did before starting the holistic protocol at the Rush Center at New York University and where you're at today. hopefully might motivate a doctor to see that there's a different reality. And finally, from the science point of view, this is certainly important. I produced a film 4 years ago called Autism Made in USA. And in it, I showed that there were multiple causes of autism spectrum disorder, not the least of which were the adjuvants and the chemicals that are in vaccines, the number of vaccines, and how much of both mercury, but also aluminum, were in the vaccines, plus environmental factors as well that can make individuals susceptible, and then how to go about helping these people. This is the latest. This is from Entropy, the peer-reviewed journal. Empirical data confirm autism symptoms related to aluminum exposure. This is from Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory, Massachusetts, MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, Cambridge, and the Internal Medical Group Practice at in Longview, Texas. It says the following. This is an article in Biosomatotic Entropy, Disorder, Disease, and Mortality. A little scientific. Quote, abstract. Autism is a condition characterized by impaired cognitive and social skills associated with a compromised immune function. The incidence is alarmingly on the rise, and environmental factors are increasingly suspected to play a role. This paper investigates word frequency patterns in the U.S. CDC's Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System database. Our results provide strong evidence supporting a link between autism and the aluminum in vaccines. I repeat this. This paper, our results provide strong evidence supporting a link between autism and aluminum in vaccines. A literature review showing toxicity of aluminum in human physiology offers further support. And it goes on in some depth. So while everyone forgot about this and saying, well, hold on, wasn't there a CDC task force headed up by a doctor, what was his name, a Dr. Paul Thorson, and didn't that put the nail in the coffin saying there was no association whatsoever between vaccines or anything in vaccines and autism? Yes, that's correct. And that's what the entire news media, the scientific community, and the vaccine industry has used. Oh, well, hold on. This just in. Danish doctor's most wanted man in the USA. Quote, the Danish doctor tops the list of people the U.S. authorities would like to get their hands on. The leading Danish researcher is involved in, gee whiz, fraud, accused of fraud, more than $10 million. He engaged in fraud. And in Denmark, suspected of having evaded paying the treasury, U.S. authorities are now requiring him to be extradited from Denmark so he can be prosecuted in the United States. Therefore, the former top scientist at Aarhus University now has also landed on the list of most wanted people in the United States. And the Danish doctor is on the list of most wanted persons in the Office of Inspector General, which combats fraud and abuse in U.S. health programs. But wasn't he the same doctor that's been used as the number one defender of the entire vaccine industry? Isn't he the number one person CDC and the FDA and U.S. Health Public Services said he did the research, there is no connection between vaccines and autism? Yeah. Wow. So let me get this right. The number one defender of vaccines not causing anything is now the number one most wanted, and where he worked as a head of research at Aarhus University in Denmark, and now he's accused of all these crimes, and gee whiz. So what does that mean about his research? Were we able to debunk his research? Yes, we were. We showed his research was absolutely wrong on all levels. All wrong. So in other words, the U.S. government was paying a man who's now on the most wanted list in the United States for fraud. But did they ever go back and then say, would you, if that means all of his work on AIDS and, or excuse me, on autism could also be fraudulent? They haven't done that yet, but we're doing it and we'll keep you posted. So today I showed two things. A, I showed the newest peer review article showing an association between aluminum in vaccines and autism. At the same time, showing you their top person defending vaccines is now on the most wanted list. Gee whiz, what a turnabout that is. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment with our guest, Dr. Joseph Marcola. Please stay with us. To welcome all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to the number one progressive radio program in the world. This is where progressive minds come to look for solutions to our problems. It's about empowering people. And by the way, for all of you who are concerned about this new story out there by Dr. Doug Owens, the leader of a task force and professor of medicine at Stanford, told ABC, quote, HIV screening is an important way to help people who have HIV and also to prevent transmission. And now they're recommending that every single American over 15 and under 65 be tested for HIV. That should send up a lot of red flags. Well, we will be responding in the following way. I will be having Nobel Prize winners in science on this topic, showing you that they are wrong, that there is no possibility to determine a person has an AIDS-defining illness using their research. But it makes the people who invented this fraudulent test very rich, and we will deconstruct all of their arguments on an upcoming program, why we should not allow ourselves to be tested, and why that test is wrong when it is used. Very quickly, before we go to Dr. Joseph Marcola, who I've given you his background earlier on today's show, his website is Marcola, MERCOLA.com. He is the author of The Known Great No Grain Diet, The Great Bird Flu Hoax, and in the past, he was a former head of family medicine department at St. Alexis Medical Center in Illinois, and in 2009, Huffington Post readers awarded Dr. Marcola as the ultimate game changer in wellness. So we're happy to have him with us. Very quickly on environmental issues. This is from the Common Dream staff. Quote, an alarming rate of Arctic ice, sea melt, and far-reaching changes to the Earth from climate change follow a year of extremes, the World Meteorological Organization said today in Qatar. And they're saying that it's beyond tipping. Quote, the extent of Arctic ice reached a new record low, an alarming rate of melt this year, highlighting the far-reaching changes taking place in the Earth's oceans and biosphere. Then, from Science Daily, from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, sea levels rising 60% faster than was anticipated by any other mathematical models. Now, having just watched a very important documentary called Chasing Ice, brilliantly filmed documentary about what it means for the ice in Greenland, Iceland, the Arctic, and the ice in Antarctica to melt, and what it's doing, and how fast it's melting. It's going beyond anything anyone predicted. We can no longer safely say, well, we don't have to worry about rising sea levels at this point because it's going to take 100 years. Wrong. You're going to see it now. I'm talking about right now. Now as we speak, the sea levels are rising, And I would expect, my prediction is that next year we'll see a Category 2, 3, or 4 hurricane hit major areas of the United States. We haven't seen that before. Look at the damage done. $65 billion with a Category 1 hurricane. More water melting, more water in the ocean. The warmer the ocean, the more the powerful the storms are and the higher they go up on that destruction scale. And finally, thawing of permafrost expected to cause significant additional global warming, not yet accounted for in any climate predictions from Science Daily. From Policy Implications of Warming Permafrost, the article, quote, permafrost covering almost a quarter of the northern hemisphere contains 1,700 gigatons of carbon, twice that currently in the atmosphere, and could significantly amplify global warming should thawing accelerate as expected. Warming permafrost can also radically change ecosystems and cause costly infrastructure damage to an increasing unstable ground. As I mentioned, once the tundras of Russia and Sweden and Norway and Canada, when they melt, when they get warm, then you have 15,000 years worth of ice that's kept it all intact. That'll melt. The methane underneath is released. When that goes up, you've just doubled the capacity for CO warming. And that's happening now at an accelerated rate. And here's the issue. Not a single thing is being done by any government to stop this. And the big players, China, India, Brazil, the United States, and Russia, the major polluters, are going to continue and actually intensify global warming because they're increasing the reliance upon coal because it's gotten cheaper. Gas hydrofracking, which will pollute the ground systems, and nuclear, which is dangerous and not reliable. And so we're not going towards what we should. Offshore wind, our Rocky Mountain wind, the solar, which we have over 17 major deserts in the United States that could virtually support all of our solar needs. Also, we've never used in the United States geothermal. We have these hot springs everywhere, thousands of them. Other countries use them and use them effectively, so there's a model there to use them, including Iceland. And, of course, the most powerful, consistent, least expensive, non-polluting of all energy, wave energy. In fact, in Knocking on the Devil's Door, Deadly Nuclear Legacy, we filmed in the East River one of these wave turbines. Turns slow, generates power, non-polluting, and you have all the currents coming in and out, in and out, in and out. It's forever. Don't even see it. We don't do anything with these because that's not where the lobbyists are. That's not where the special interest group is. So what is the answer? I'll give you the good news, bad news. The good news is don't trust any governmental agency or any person or any politician, A, to do anything right because they're incapable of it, and B, they can't because they've already committed themselves to who supported them financially and who aligned with them ideologically. Their whole future, their reputation, not only in office, out of office, is tied to those people that pay their checks. So where does that leave us with the good news? The good news is there's going to be a movement in the next 12 to 24 months back to the land. I'm talking about a rather substantial movement, probably 2% of the population. Now you can say, well, that's not a whole lot of people. Well, that's 6 million people. 6 million people is a lot of people. And you'll start to see communities that are sustainable, having more people get off the grids and go to natural, renewable lifestyles, organic food and farming, because at least in the future, if you're not going to be living in a metropolitan area with lots of money to pay for that, then you still got to eat, you still got to take care of yourself or your family. A move back to the farms are going to be the future. I'll be having a lecture on this in January. And by the way, I don't know if they have an archive to go back and see it, but I was watching on Al Jazeera the other day when a woman who was a professional with her husband but had made not enough money to keep up for the cost and her bills in, I think it was Madrid, moved back to the country And now they have their own little garden. And this whole village that was almost empty for 20 years now is packed with people who are moving back to the land. So all over Italy, Spain, I'm talking with people in Ireland who are moving from Dublin and the other major cities back into the country. So there's a reversal. 50 years, people left the farms to go to the cities. Then they went in from the cities to the suburbs. Now they're going back to the country. I see that happening in the United States starting in the next 12 to 24 months. Let's go over and say hello to my guest, Dr. Joseph Marcola. Nice to have you with us today.
Well, thanks for having me, Gary.
Next week we are premiering, next Thursday evening here in New York, the new documentary, GMOs, Seeds of Death. And you're in it in many different areas. In fact, we're still editing the final film, and we'll get it to you before the premiere next week. In the film, you make several statements that a lot of people, the average person, may not fully appreciate. I wanted you to have an opportunity to talk about what it means to be on the right side of science, healing, the truth, and history. And yet, like so many other people in who stand out and take a step forward for truth, instead of at least having a media open to the truth or some basis open for it, people instead attack. And you've been on the right side on so many issues. Talk about GMOs and why the media, the politicians, and so much of the American public are on the wrong side of this issue.
Well, I'd love to comment on that, but before I did, I'd also like to mention a few words about what you were mentioning before your last break, which was the autism issue and the vaccines, because there's, if that's okay.
Yeah,
there's,
sure.
There's a few important comments on that. You were lining up with the connection with the aluminum, and was Dr. David Ayoub the author of that study you referenced? The review? So I think he's, I've interviewed him before, and I definitely agree that aluminum is not something that you should be injecting intradermally or intramuscularly. But the vaccine...
No, it's Robert Davidson and Stephanie Seneff.
Oh, okay. Stephanie's a good friend of mine, too. So she's... I've actually interviewed her a few times. And, you know, the aluminum is definitely something to be avoided. But there's even potentially more important causal factors for autism, and that would be use of the that actually results from a dysfunction in the immune system, and that is vitamin D given to the mother prenatally, and also vitamin K2, which makes it work even better, and that in combination with a really strong complement of good beneficial bacteria, either in supplemental form but more ideally in fermented foods, to heal the gut. So when you have a healthy gut bacteria and you have optimal levels of vitamin D prenatally, you can get these vaccines and not suffer the consequences. Now, I'm not recommending the vaccines, but if someone believes that there's benefit to them, I think it would be gross malpractice or negligence to not address the vitamin D prenatally and the beneficial bacteria. In fact, there's even tests that you can do for the child to see if these urinary tests, they can see if their bacterial concentrations are optimized before they get a vaccine.
Good. I appreciate that. Could you...
Yeah, really important information, because autism is an increasing epidemic. I mean, it's gone up 100-fold since I started practicing, and it's taking care of hundreds of these kids, and it's just devastating. It destroys families. Many relationships are broken up as a result of it. And just to see these kids suffer needlessly because of corporate greed is just, you know, it's just tragic. But anyway, getting back to your other question about the GMOs, you know, we were the, many may not know, but I was the lead contributor financially for the California ballot initiative, which is, you know, many people view it as failed. We passed, it narrowly was defeated, but only because we were outspent by 500% by these massively large corporations. So literally for the month of October, if you live in California, I suspect most of your listeners are in New York, but for those who were in California, every hour on every single major radio station, on every TV station, there was an ad to vote no on this campaign that although he told them to vote no, but typically vilified me as some evil lunatic trying to cause them to pay more for this proposition. So it's a real testimony to the effectiveness of corporate money to influence it. Because prior to their spending the money, the population was 90% in favor of labeling. We weren't saying you should eliminate GMOs. We just let the public know, and the whole campaign was the right to know, not to eliminate them, but just let them know. Now, I personally would never consume any GMOs voluntarily, but you know, if someone believes that there's a benefit to that, then they should have the right to do that. It's a free country, but they should also have the right to know whether it's in their foods, and that was our main thrust.
Why don't you discuss some of the lies that were engaged in about GMOs to influence the public?
Well, there was two primary ones. The basic one was that it would increase the cost if this proposition was passed to the average family by $400 or $500 a year. There's just an absolute fabrication of lies created by some PR firm, you know, on a ridiculous study that they never had to prove. You know, and it was part of this fraud and deception too. They would film these researchers, scientists, you know, that they bought off in front of like a picture of the FDA to give, or Stanford University, to give the illusion that the FDA or the Stanford was agreeing with their position, and they actually got sued for it as a result because it was just absolute fraud. But the average cost to the consumer in California if this legislation were passed would have been pennies a year, not $400. So it was just an absolute lie. That was probably the biggest and probably the most effective. I mean, they have access to enormous sums of money, and this money can buy very effective marketing. So they poll and they hire really clever social scientists, and they know what will work, and they just invest the money, and they are able to achieve their results.
Tell us what you know about the dangers of eating genetically modified foods.
Well, here's the challenge, Gary. As you know, there was a big French study that was published shortly before the ballot in November 6th that was showed that there was significant concerns in rats. Because typically these studies are done for a short time, maybe 3 months is typically the longest. So this French researcher actually conducted a study where he did it for the entire lifespan of the rats, and he did actually follow the same model that Monsanto used to have their GMO foods approved by the FDA, which is interesting because after the study was published, all these researchers are saying, well, the study method is wrong, it's irrelevant, you can't do that. Well, they just copied what Monsanto used. But Monsanto did the studies before they published it, and they knew that if you extended the study for a long period of time, there'd be loads of complications and tumors and premature deaths, and they stopped it before this happened. It's kind of like letting someone smoke for a few weeks or a few months and saying, well, and then looking at the results of, you know, and no, there's no damage done, so it's approved. Well, they didn't look at it long term, but if you follow this long term, there's enormous amounts of damage. And many of these rats die prematurely, and we've posted an article on the site. You could look out on the web. I mean, you can see massive tumors in these animals. So this is a short-term experiment, and actually, unfortunately, the bulk of the population in many Western worlds, in the United States for sure, is being exposed to this experiment. I mean, there's no long-term studies in humans, none. It just don't exist. So it's all speculation. It's riddled with massive corruption and revolving doors between industry and the federal regulatory agencies and, you know, the Department of Agriculture, the judiciary, the legislative branches. It's just massive. And, you know, basically designed to maximize profits by Monsanto and some of the other biotech biggies at the expense of the health, long-term health, and potential, the threat of the very existence of the food supply. I mean, once the genie gets out of the bottle, this could be irreversible. I'm not suggesting it will be or that it is, but it certainly has the potential. And it would just certainly seem prudent to exert the precautionary principle when we just don't know. I mean, when you're dealing with something so basic as the food supply of the human race.
Well, based upon the work of Professor Lipton and his looking at the work of the jumping gene concept, he is of the belief that until such time that we can prove that a genetically modified organism, whether it's in a cow or chicken or fish or corn or tomatoes, will not alter the genome within the human being, they should not be used in human beings. Because he said there is a entirely plausible hypothesis based upon what we know about genes and the bacterium genes and the transference factors, that it could happen. And therefore, you may not see it for two or three generations. And that's also what some of the research has shown, that you can't always look at whether or not there's a teratogenic or mutagenic or carcinogenic element in the immediate animal. It may occur the next generation or the next generation. And none of that research has been done with genetically engineered. We, the people, become the guinea pigs.
Absolutely. And, you know, these items were approved by the U.S. federal regulatory agencies and under the provision that there was none of these genetically modified genes were transferred or antigens were transferred into humans. And that's just been shown to be false. I mean, there's a number of studies done recently that show that these are winding up in the placentas and the urine of pregnant women, and it is being transferred. And we have no idea of the consequences of this in the human population. We have some strong suggestions from animal studies, but no one studied it in humans. And I don't know how it could be anything but bad. I mean, this is not going to improve our health.
You're right. My final question for you is a personal nature one. You have been out there helping educate the American public on health issues. Why is it that the vast majority of American physicians and nurses and scientists have not been open to examining the evidence that you and other complementary physicians are using to help your patients and even to dialogue on these, if nothing else?
Well, there's a number of good reasons for that, because many of these clinicians are just victims of this whole system that is really orchestrated by these massively influential corporate interests. So they set up a system that essentially severely chastises them, if not even more severely with their license restrictions, if they begin to explore these areas. And they're practicing outside what's considered the standard of care. But the standard of care is essentially something created through the drug industrial complex, through their control of the major journal publications and these regulatory agencies and the journal review boards that essentially set the standard. So there's this reluctance to go against the grain from that perspective. And, you know, it's just really a very clever system that is designed to essentially control that process so that they come, that their final recommendation and is that the physicians have when they're connecting with the patients is really a drug-based solution. So they have a model where they see them for a few minutes, rarely more than 5 or 10, and quickly make an assessment or some diagnostic strategies that typically result in the prescription being given. And, you know, the average person, adult in the United States, is taking 13 prescriptions a year. 13 prescriptions a year. That's insane. I mean, it's just virtually none of those prescriptions. I mean, there's a few that maybe insulin for type 1 diabetic, insulin dependent. But virtually none of these prescriptions ever treat the foundational cause of the disease. Even an insulin doesn't treat it. It just is an effective solution. The treatment, of course, would be to replace the beta cells in the pancreas. But it's a fatally flawed model. It absolutely is.
Mm. I appreciate all the good work you do, and we look forward to another discussion. I'm going to set aside a long interview with you when you have the time to talk about the so-called legitimacy of Quackbusters and how they've been...
Well, that would be a good discussion, because we've recently identifies some of their major criteria. It's really a whole big complex web that stems back to London and the Science Media Center. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but we just uncovered this in the last 6 weeks or so.
Great. Well, we will have that discussion because we've been going through all their writings to find out how inaccurate they are. Then we went through the court records to see how often they're discredited in court under oath and disqualified from being experts, but how none of this ends up getting into the media, so they continue to have an inordinate amount of power they don't deserve.
It's even far worse than you can imagine. It's international. It's not
right.
Just the U.S.
Well, then we will have that conversation in the near future. Joseph Marcola, thank you, Joe, for being on with us today.
Well, thanks, Gary, for having me. Appreciate it.
Joseph Marcola. We're coming up to the end of our regular program. You can continue listening to when we go to our talkback segment at 888-874-4888 by calling 832-280-0066, 832-280-0066. And let me also mention that for those of you who live on Long Island, I will be premiering GMOs, Seeds of Death, on Sunday, December 9th, at the Huntington Cinema Arts Center on Park Avenue. If you're a BAI member, you get a reduced ticket. It's only $10. Plus, you're going to get a book for $25 and a video for $40. So you're getting like $75 worth of free input, plus the film itself and a Q&A afterwards. I'll be there December 9th, Sunday, 2 p.m., Huntington Arts Cinema. To get tickets, you can call 631-423-7611, 631-423-7611. And to get tickets, if any remain, for my next Thursday, December 6th, 7 p.m. here in New York, you can call 646-926-5422, 646-926-5422. Let's say hello to Harvey from Berkeley. Hi, Harvey.
Hi, Gary. Well, there's a couple points I'd like to make about the melting of the polar caps that people don't realize, that the weight of the ice on the bottom and the top of the polar cap constitutes billions and billions of pounds, and as they melt, it reduces the weight, and the planet is like our skull. It has these various plates, and so the tectonic plates are constantly readjusting, and that means that as the polar caps melt due to global warming, you're going to have more frequent and larger earthquakes, and especially here in California, you have the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant. It's a Fukushima waiting to happen. But another point about that is that the it turns out that nuclear power plants are really responsible for a lot of global warming. The lie is that they're not. In the mining, refining, transportation, storage, guarding, and building and decommissioning of nuclear power plants, but that's not really the thing. The thing is that the hundreds of nuclear power plants around the world, when they take in water, like the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant, goes through 2 billion gallons of water a day. They often release the water up to 80 degrees hotter. So you have all these power plants every day on our lakes, rivers, and oceans, turning the water out 80 degrees hotter. We know that over time, water expands when heated. So nuclear power plants are directly one of the major responsible forms of energy that are creating global warming, especially ocean rise. So I say close these nuclear power plants down now because they do cause a lot of global warming.
Harvey from Berkeley, California, you are absolutely correct on each of those issues. Thank you very much for sharing them. Austin from Connecticut, your turn.
Yeah, I listened to something on BAI earlier today and about campaign financing and how some of these corporations essentially are like money laundering, and they're put their money through these nonprofit organizations, and so their fingerprints aren't on it. And you had talked a few weeks back about like the NAACP and all over California, and how they were putting money to fight Prop 37, and I wondered if there's, you know, if this is what's happening. Is it, they're getting $100,000, they get to keep 10, and they put 90 again.
All you are correct. All of these organizations, including sadly many of the historically large environmental groups have received tens of millions, in some cases hundreds of millions of dollars, from the very polluting industries, and suddenly they're off their radar. They no longer talk about it. It's no longer an issue. They focus on something else. Now, they will use that money for their self first, and then they'll do something on an environmental issue, but they get to keep an awful lot of the money that they get from these corporate interests and think tanks and foundations. Lou Ann, you're finishing us up today. Hi, Lou Ann.
Hello, Gary. Well, I've got something here from Robert, and he says, did you hear about a Dr. Owens, a professor of medicine at Stanford University, who told ABC Network that every American should be screened for HIV?
Yes, I did, and what we're going to do is we're inviting in some leading scientists, top virologists, top AIDS doctors, to show that that would be completely unscientific and be wrong, because over 75 different normal conditions will give you a positive but false reading. For example, if you have the measles, if you're pregnant, if you have arthritis, also, if you've had malaria or tuberculosis or herpes, you could test positive then when you get this test. Imagine how many millions upon tens of millions of people, based upon having weakened immune systems and having had exposure to different conditions, would then be labeled as HIV positive and immediately be put onto antiretroviral drugs, which would then kill them. That is what this is about. This has nothing to do about protecting the public. Because if you ask yourself this, who still gets AIDS today? Define the three groups that still are the only groups getting AIDS in any statistical number today, or AIDS-defining illnesses. Fast-track gays, intravenous drug users, and hemophiliacs. That hasn't changed in 27 years. So the fact that they have been wrong on every single one of their hypotheses, the fact that they've spent more money than on heart disease and cancer combined, and the fact is, it is just a self-perpetuating myth factory. Now, there are 30 conditions that you could say are serious, some life-threatening, like pneumocystis, green pneumonia, Kaposi's sarcoma, but they are caused from different reasons, and we can go into that. We will. We're going to deconstruct the whole AIDS paradigm in the next 12 months, Luann.
Excellent.
Thank you. Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. How are you doing?
Doing great. What's up today, Utrice?
Today is Open Forum Day, where everybody gets to sound off on the things that they think are important and want to share their particular views on the topics that we've been discussing.
Great. Utrice, you might want to consider sometime after the first year visiting New York and having a lecture where everyone who... and by the way, I just came across some photographs of you and I raising funds together in 2001.
Oh, wow. Oh my gosh.
Down at BAI, and all the volunteers. I just came across a packet yesterday, so I'm going to send you those. But I think it'd be great if you came to New York and did a lecture for the people who are interested in coming to see you.
Oh, it'd be great. I'd love to do that.
Excellent.
And I should do that soon.
Utrice Lead, coming to New York soon and coming to you right now on Open Forum. Have a nice day, everyone.
My heart is crying, crying.